Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai Elantra, winner of the ALG Residual Value Award 2 years in a row.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 131 for December 22nd, 2011. And to all, a good night. Watch Autoline After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, ho, 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 folks, and welcome to this special Christmas edition of Autoline After Hours. And joining me, as always, is the Auto Extremist, full of Christmas cheer.
Oh, ho, ho.
Oh. Yeah. Santa Extremist.
Yeah. Santa Extremist. And you might know that voice, you who are only listening, David Welch from Bloomberg News with us.
Back by popular demand.
By popular demand.
Exactly.
And they are demanding.
What they want.
Say what?
Give the people what they want.
Of course. So here's the whole thing on this show. We're going to go back over what's happened this year. We're going to be giving presents to those who we think did a good job or products that we think are good, and lumps of coal to those people and products and whatever else it might be that we did not like. And since we're just going to be delving into this, we're not going to be doing rapid fire tonight. For, I think, the first time ever that we've ever done the show, we're not doing rapid fire. And since next week is the week between the holidays, we're taking that week off and we're going to be gone. But let's get to the fun part. Let's get to the presents and the lumps of coal. And
go ahead, John. You leave.
Oh, I was going to say, Santa DiLorenzo, you got to be the one that starts this off.
Okay. My first lump of coal goes to Sergio Marchionne. Oh, my God, how can you criticize the great Sergio? But I will. I mean, yeah, he's done a lot of good things. But let's not forget that the all the successful stuff going on in Chrysler right now is stuff that was well in the pipeline before Sergio got there. My beef with Sergio and the reason he gets a lump of coal is how badly he screwed up the Fiat launch. He hasn't admitted it yet, and it's too bad, but he just screwed it up so bad. I don't know if Fiat's ever going to get off the mat.
That's a good question. I'd give him a lump of coal for that. I might give him some presents for some of the other things that's gone on at Chrysler. I mean, they're talking about, for 2012, doing $2 billion in pre-tax profits. And
yeah, money's good.
The money's good, and I see a lot of change there. But I will agree with you. The Fiat brand may be so severely damaged now, it may not get off the ground.
Well, they never did the proper... They needed a pre-marketing thing, a campaign that establishes, you know, why Fiat? Why do I care? Nobody cares.
No, that's exactly what they botched with it.
And the Fiat 500 is a cute car, but now it was just the car of the flavor of the moment this summer.
Here's one question. Somebody was saying to me that there was like another 5% of Chrysler they would get if they brought out this Fiat, and this is the first I had heard of it. I don't know if you
they're supposed to get another 5%, and I thought they were going to.
Well, that's when they bring out a 40-mile-per-gallon car. That's
Dart.
A Chrysler car, which
that's
is going to be the Dart.
The Dart.
But was there anything, why did they rush the 500 to market? Was there anything with deal with the government, or is this just their own decision?
I don't think that had anything to do with it. Yeah, I think they were just...
So they just blew the whole launch.
Yeah. And as long as we're doling out coal and gifts in Auburn Hills, I will give Sergio a gift because, like Peter said, a lot of the groundwork was laid with some of the products before he got there. But the fact that he's been able to integrate these two companies pretty quickly, get product development going, that's really hard to do. It's tough to manage cultures, and it's tough to make money in this business with the product line they had. So I give him a gift for that. The guy I give the cult to over this Fiat thing is Olivier France.
Well, I was going to get
he's the head of marketing, and there was no kind of pre-Fiat launch. I think the whole J-Lo thing What does that mean to anybody? What is it? I mean, you're bringing Fiat, the only Italian brand in the U.S. market, back to the U.S. for the first time.
And you bring it to the Bronx.
There was
there's no connection. Now, I will also give Olivier, and I don't want to kind of, I'm not going to give everybody a ball and a strike here. I'll give him a gift for the M&M spot. And one of the reasons I'm specifically doing this is I was extremely critical on our blog of that spot when it came out, and it ended up doing very well for them. It's kind of become their anthem. It's resonated. I got to tip my hat to that. I was wrong.
Yeah. It worked. Yeah. And the big proof of the pudding is sales of the Chrysler 200 the car featured in that ad.
Which is a decidedly ordinary car, by the way. Yeah, I'll give him a present for that, Frank Olivier. But I'll give him a ton of coal for the fact that thematically they took that spot and ran it into the ground and beat it to death and kept repackaging it all year to the point where, you know, it started to erode some of the nice impact from the M&M spot. But that's kind of classic marketing 101 screw-up. You know, you have a hit, and you're so desperate to keep the hit going that you inevitably just ruin it.
And, you know, I'll agree with you there. I thought the J-Lo thing of her driving through the Bronx and, you know, saying this is my neighborhood.
It's a reboot of the M&M spot.
Exactly right. Street grit, you know, ethnic, blah, blah, blah.
What
and
does
it's
have
like,
to do
this
with,
is a
yeah.
cute
you,
little
You're talking about
car,
a popular no? Latina pop singer.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Bronx? I thought it was Spanish Harlem.
Maybe it was.
I think it is Harlem, because I think she mentions Harlem, but it doesn't matter. It's gritty New York, let's say that. Well, and what's that have to do with an Italian brand? I mean, Italian brand.
That's a design statement.
Yes.
A fashion statement.
Which has, you know, a Gucci edition of the 500.
Well, now they have the Abarth version. Everyone's all getting all jiggy over the spot, you know, for the Abarth. But, you know, that's not the point, you know. Let's back up. Don't forget, Sergio came down from the mountaintop and promised these dealers who would invest in brick and mortar for Fiat that it was all going to come good in 2012. Trust me on this one. Then the Fiat launch was botched. I mean, they put Laura Suave in charge, but in her defense, they didn't give her any money. So what did she do?
She didn't give her any decision power.
Well, I'll tell you what they did give her, an impossible sales goal.
Yeah.
50,000 Fiat 500.
Well, that was
going to happen.
That's Sergio. That's bombastic, egomaniacal Sergio.
What did Mini sell of the Cooper and Cooper S the first year?
It
for
would.
A car that was priced much lower than it is now.
I want to say it was like 26,000 or something like that the first year.
I mean, granted, the 500 is cheaper, but it's not that much cheaper than the original.
Not when you put some
you could start a regular Cooper, which was about half of sales back then in 2002 when they started. You could get them at 16,000.
Right. That was the base.
But,
yep.
You know, this is Sergio's deal. I mean, he promised the dealer, hey, you know, you build these stores, and then we're going to just dump a bunch of great Alphas products in there, and it's going to be all good, and you're all going to make money. But absolutely, we have to have exclusive Fiat points out there. That killed the car.
They actually should have launched Alpha first.
Well, I mean, I heard from a dealer in L.A. said, you know what? That one decision and not allowing the top-performing Chrysler dealers, such as it is, to not get that car, he sealed his
fate. Yeah, the other thing, why every time the car companies, other than Toyota, the only smart one on this, has some boutique brand that they want to launch, do they have to say, oh, it's going to be so damn good that we need this whole separate franchise, whole separate showrooms, everyone's got to sign up, the volume will be there, trust us, and the dealers buy it. And then the dealers are always angry later on, but they bought this. The GM did the same thing with Hummer, and it was stupid. If they had made Hummer an adjunct in the Cadillac showroom and made it truly upscale, authentic Hummer SUVs that were like the Lamborghini of the SUV, all about performance.
Could still be in business today.
It might still be in business, and they wouldn't need volume. It would be something to bring traffic to the Cadillac showroom. They'd still make money on them, albeit in total dollars a lot less than they did, but it'd still be alive. Mm-hmm. Fiat brand or Alfa, you know, should have been in Chrysler.
They had to be looking at Mini, which did start with totally separate showrooms, which did start with
Everyone's
one car in the showroom.
Mini, and this is one way they're fooled by Mini. And the other way is, oh, everybody wants small cars. And the only reason they didn't buy small cars before is because they were cheap. And if we make them more expensive, then they'll buy them. It's sort of like, you know, when everyone decided that, you know, the only way poor people could afford cars and houses is if you gave them loans, and they said, well, how are they going to pay them back? I know, we'll charge them more interest. They're guaranteed to pay it. It is just counter logic.
Right.
And it's blown up in everybody's face. People are fooled by both things with many, that you need the separate showrooms and all that. The companies are, and then you know, the people really want expensive small cars. They want one. They want many.
Well, I guess we should have brought a coal truck to Sergio instead. But I got another lump of coal to give out to an executive. I want to give one to Victor Mueller at Saab, because this thing I didn't believe was going to fly from the get-go unless he got a lot of money. And by a lot of money, I don't mean hundreds of millions of dollars. I meant a couple of billion dollars. And then I would have said, okay, you're good to go, chap. Now go do the cars and sell them. But I think there actually should be an investigation of Victor Mueller. I want to know, what kind of a salary did he pay himself during this whole transition? And of the tens of millions of dollars that he did get from various investors, where'd that money go? I mean, ostensibly, it went to pay bills.
No.
Did it?
Burn through a lot of money fast.
Well, they can, but David, as you know, it wasn't being burnt on product development, which really eats the cash. You know, they were just trying to pay salaries of their workers who were not building cars, and their engineers who were not engineering new ones.
That's what you said right there. I mean, they're paying workers who are not building cars. That eats a lot of money. I have him on my list as well, and yeah, he
for a lump of coal.
Yeah, although I sort of want to give him a parting gift in the sense that, like, maybe an airline ticket to French Polynesia, because I think there are going to be a lot of people looking for him for money, least of all the Saab buyers who might have some warranty issues.
And most of all, the Chinese who did put tens of millions of dollars ostensibly into that company.
You know,
where's the money? That's what I want to know.
I think he needs to be investigated, but he's going to have creditors who want money, and I think he's going to need to find a place far away to protect his own
The only reason I say this is we know that Victor has had shady financial dealings in the past. He's been investigated. He's dealt with Russian tycoons who General Motors didn't want anything to do with because they think those tycoons should be in jail. And that's why because not knowing that, I would have said, God bless Victor Mueller. He tried to save a brand. He threw his life into trying to save it. But now knowing that he's got a bit of a shady past, that's why I'm saying somebody ought to start diving into where the money
is. Sure they will. I think he's going to have a lot of investigators, maybe the least of his problems. I mean, he's going to have creditors who want him. He may have some Russians who want him. This is not good days for Victor.
Didn't GM just announce they're covering the warranty?
They'll cover warranties.
Just for the stuff made while they owned it.
Right.
Not the. I mean,
so
granted, they only sold couple thousand
cars. So that
doesn't
cover the new 9.5.
No, it does not. You had to buy it, I think it was before February of 2010.
Okay.
And if you bought a car before February of 2010, a Saab, GM will cover the warranty, they say. So, David, we haven't heard any of your specific presents or lumps of coal.
I doled plenty out in Auburn Hills and Victor. But my big lump of coal is to Honda. Look, they're still a profitable company and all of that, but, you know, the new Civic not getting recommended by Consumer Reports. I've driven it. The interior is not up to snuff of what I expect from Honda. I think it's actually weaker than the outgoing Civic.
It is.
You know, and you can kind of sit back and look at Honda and say, okay, the Ridgeline failed. Pickup trucks are definitely not their thing. And, you know, maybe they took a risk with the Cross Tour, and it just didn't work out. At least they've got some Daring Do.
And a risk with the Ridgeline. And a risk with the CRZ.
And all that stuff piles up. And you can excuse some of those, some you can't. But the real problem is when they can't do a Civic well and have it come out and get all kinds of accolades and be wildly popular and a smash hit, something has gone seriously wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I'd add a big lump of coal for Honda, but I have to add even, I think, a freight car full of coal for the Acura executives who I think I kind of know what they were trying to say in explaining the new direction for Acura, but they screwed it up so badly that all that came off is that they were aiming for mediocrity. You know, we really can't
compete. I'm not sure they achieved that.
Yeah, we really can't compete, so we're just going to kind of do a nicer Honda.
That's the kiss of death.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, when they're designing stuff with front ends that, you know, are ghosts of long-lost Kelvinators, I mean, they've got nothing. And their latest push, which I wrote about a couple of weeks ago, was just like, really, guys? Are you kidding me? You know, just shut up. Just don't talk. Let's show the product. But the more you explain, the worse it gets, you know, so...
Well, supposedly at the Detroit Auto Show, that's going to be a big show for Honda. They've got, I think, 3 Acura models that they're bringing, and they've got a concept for the next Honda Coupe, Accord Coupe, that supposedly shows a new styling direction.
Yeah, but you know how that when they show a concept, it's usually the car.
For Honda, it is,
yeah.
Right. So,
well, we'll see. Detroit's shaping up to be a huge show, so.
Yeah. Hey, why don't we take a quick break here? Got to thank our sponsors for making the show possible. And Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
Okay, I want to start giving out some presents here, not just lumps of coal. And since we just heard an ad, I want to stick with advertising. And Ben, I hope you got that ad ready, because I want to talk about my favorite car ad of the year, which came from Kia. And they brought back the hamsters, and I just thought this thing was a lot of fun. It's for the Kia Soul. And... Let me set this up, and then we'll run some of the ad, but it's called Rock Party Anthem. It's a song called Every Day I'm Shuffling, and it starts out with these, it looks like you're inside a video game and robots killing robots, and all of a sudden a soul appears, and then there's 3 dancing hamsters, and then the robots all start dancing with them, and it comes off a whole lot better than I'm describing, but Ben, let's run a little bit of that. Peter, you're the advertising expert. Does the ad do anything for you?
Yeah, no,
you'd give it a present like I would?
Yeah, absolutely. I like it a lot. It's fun. After spending so much time in the business, you know, the M&M spot was cool and everything. Mm-hmm. But you know what? People remember spots that entertain them and are funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's face it. You know, as an ad guy, ex-ad guy, I would love to have a spot like that, you know, that just makes you...
And it's amazing to me. It always blows me away how the right music can just transform an ad.
Absolutely.
It just can make an ad. And that's got to be a real science, pairing the right music with an ad.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, when it hits, it's great. It's great.
I've got a good gift.
What?
Here's a gift for Fritz Henderson, the... fired CEO of GM. One of the final things that got him pushed out the door was he wanted to sell Opel, and his board voted against it. And now, after projecting that they would at least break even this year, GM is saying, well, that's probably not going to happen, and we're looking at other restructuring
methods. How much are they going to lose this year?
Everything is on the table, is what the executives have said, and they're you know, people are wondering if they need to take this into the German version of bankruptcy, which is a lot tougher to do in Germany than it is here. So they're now finding out that
Fritz was right.
Fritz was dumb. Oh, but he is not so dumb. And Fritz is not the guy to toot his horn, so I'm going to toot his horn. Give him a gift for that one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars, not even close to break even, right? And now they've sent Gursky and...
Gursky's now chairman of the supervisory board.
Right.
Dan Ammon and Tim Lee.
And Tim Lee,
Ammon's
right.
The CFO. Tim Lee's the president of GM International Operations, which is basically Asia and
Russia. Now we're going to see if they can do it.
Yep.
Rats of Ruck, boys, is what I say. That's going to be a tough one to do.
Yes, it is. Opel, they still have... too much manufacturing in Germany, where it's so expensive to make cars, and they don't get pricing. I mean, they're what Chrysler was like 4 years ago, only in Europe, where it's highly competitive in every segment of the market. And, I mean, you know, Chrysler had all those problems, but at least they had pickup trucks and large SUVs that only GM and Ford had, and a lot of the other competitors didn't. So, yeah, I mean, imagine Chrysler 4 or 5 years ago without the Ram and the Durango and the 300.
Yeah.
And the minivan.
Right. But, you know, the thing is, what's going to face Gursky and Ammon and Lee is this is not going to be a hard-nosed business decision. They've already tried that. This is get in the trenches, slug it out in German politics. You know, this isn't a lack of, prior managers not making the right decision.
American executives at General Motors who have, you know, no experience working in Germany decide to take over Opel and fix it and convince the unions that they need to sacrifice. Have you heard this one before? Have you seen this play out?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you. A present to Fritz Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
What you got on your list, Peter?
Well, I wanted him to give him a present, give him a break. But you know what? Dan Akerson's going to get a whole freight train full of coal because, this speaks to the Opel decision. I mean, he's probably saying, yeah, we're going to go in there and fix it. Well, I don't think that's going to work. Dan, he was gifted the job himself a little over a year ago. To run GM, and
I'm not sure he saw it as a gift.
I know he saw it as an entitlement.
No, I sort of look the way Ed Whitaker abruptly left. I sort of see Akerson sort of like the Three Stooges in the French Foreign Legion episode where they need three volunteers for the suicide mission, and everyone else in the line takes a step back.
Yeah, as I said, he was the only guy that picked up the phone that day.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah, I'll do it, but. He's got a real, he doesn't have a feel for PR. He doesn't have a feel for the media. He says inevitably the wrong thing. And I thought after the disastrous Detroit News interview, he learned his lesson. And then in the latest Bold episode, Mark Royce is perfectly capable to lead the company's position on that. They had the press conference with Mary Barra. Stay out of it. But now some guy, media guy, corrals him and he says, yeah, we might have to fix Barra. Well, we might buy some cars back. It's just like he's on his way to lunch and he just throws out a comment. What? So I don't know. I'm giving Dan the benefit of the doubt, but I don't know what to say about the guy. I mean, he's not, he doesn't listen to anyone, apparently, when it comes to PR and what you can and cannot say. So I don't know.
Lump of coal for him.
Lump of coal.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I'll reel off some presents.
Good.
Porsche for the new 911, which I had the pleasure of driving, which is awesome. Huh. Audi for not losing their mojo because, and by the way, Johan Denijsen's my auto executive of the year, auto extremist executive of the year, because it's really hard to keep that momentum going. You know, he's got the German headquarters saying, sell more and give us more money, give us more profits. He's got the dealers who's saying, we need to make more money. And then he's got all of that churning, and yet he's managed to keep, at least, in the U.S., of course, globally, Audi's red hot. But in the U.S., Johan's doing a fabulous job.
I say Cadillac beware, because if Johan keeps working his magic, Audi is going to surpass Cadillac in the American market. In passenger cars, take trucks out for the moment, it's knocking on the door. Now, XTS and ATS, new models from Cadillac, that might fix it for Cadillac, but right now, Johan's biting their heels.
I gotta say, the ATS, maybe. The XTS, this one's just off the cuff. I give it a lump of coal just because that concept car was so stunning. And the production car.
Now, are you confusing the CL concept car with the X?
I think there was significant design creep. Hmm. And the front overhang on the production version of the XTS
is way too long. That does not fly in the luxury market. We've seen that. That the reason rear drive works isn't just performance. It's the design proportions you can get. The longer dash to axle, and that car doesn't have it, and I think it's going to have a tough time.
I actually think, you know, the XCS is probably going to do better than we think, because there are a lot of people out there who aren't hardcore enthusiasts but who would like a nice bigger car, and they spend money.
Well, I think it'll definitely do better than the STS, which has just been a dog in the market.
Sure.
So this is going to be a better car.
We'll see
what
it's volume that they need. It's another entry. The ATS is the one that I think will do it for them.
Well, yeah, but I mentioned this in the site. You know, it was kind of like the old GM. The old GM always overpromised and underdelivered. I mean, it's fine internally if they want to say we're targeting the 3 Series. But as soon as they said that in public, I think it put a weight on that car that it didn't need out of the gate. That car, if it's good, needs to bubble up from the bottom. You don't launch out of the gate and says we're going toe-to-toe with the 3 Series. I mean, come on. Let it find its own, you know, level. And if the magazines and the reviewers say, you know, it's pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
And instead of saying we're going after 3 Series, because, you know, as soon as you said that, you know what the reviews are going to say at the very end? You know, it's a really fine effort from General Motors and Cadillac, but it ain't no 3 Series. So they shot themselves in the head by doing that, and that's too bad because, you know, I'll give a present to the true believers within GM and Chrysler and Ford and all the car companies. The true believers are the ones that in the design and engineering and product development who really churn out, you know, they make these cars and trucks what they are. So all the true believers from all the companies deserve presents, because unless you're immersed in this business, you don't know what's involved, what a grind it is.
Very true. And you got to keep the faith.
Yeah.
And you got to keep the faith for years.
Yeah.
Even when your boss is making you do stupid things. And to your point, those people are there because they love cars and they love making great cars.
You know, well, I've given Cole a Cadillac because I think the brand has just lost its momentum. And I could be wrong on the XTS. Styling is extremely subjective. I give a present to Buick. Treasury wanted to kill Buick. Every pundit in automotive Preston wanted to kill Buick for about the last 20 years. And sales are up 17%. The LaCrosse has done well. Regal's doing pretty well.
Verano's a pretty good car.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's a pretty good small car.
From what I've read and what I've heard. You know, Buick suddenly has a bit of cachet almost. And the brand still has a long way to go. But
you know, I think it was Jim Hall on this program who made the point that to the younger generation, younger than us, even younger than you, David, Buick is, it's a clean slate. They don't have an opinion about it, really. And so you can, somebody forgot to turn off their phone.
That's true.
Mr. Welch. And here I was, agreeing with you.
There we go.
That's good.
It's a nice holiday ring, Dave.
Yeah, no kidding. And
yes,
in fact, Ben, let's bring in those sleigh bells, because I want to give out another present before we take a break. There you go. I'm giving a present to Volkswagen because they did another car ad that I liked a lot. It's all about promoting the diesel Passat, I believe, or is it the diesel Jetta? I'm not sure which one, but I like the ad.
Passat.
Okay, let's run up a little bit of that.
Road trip, buddy. Let's put some music on.
Welcome to Learning Spanish in the Car.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, this is good.
Vámonos. Gracias.
Gracias. Now they're driving and driving and driving because it's a diesel.
3 segundos en el carro sin parar y no traes música. Mira, entra y cómprame unas papitas.
Get up to 795 miles per tank in the all-new Volkswagen Passat TDI.
They're speaking fluent Spanish. They start out not knowing it at all. By the end,
700 miles later.
But what I love about this ad is, yes, it's funny, but it's driving home the point of the value of this diesel engine, that you can just drive forever on this thing. So it's not just a punchline, ha-ha.
Yeah.
It's a punchline that sells the point.
And just for pure entertainment value, their Super Bowl spot with the kid and the Darth Vader thing was great.
In fact, who, somebody rated that, or I don't know if, who said that was the number one ad of the Super Bowl, even more than the M&N ad from viewership or something like that.
Yeah, it went over well. It was very well done.
I have to give coal to electric cars.
Yeah.
And not to burn to generate more juice to charge up the batteries.
I'll jump in there with you. The whole electrification thing.
It's not stillborn, but I just don't see, as Nissan builds that plant in Smyrna to make 100,000 volts, or
150,000. Plus a battery plant.
And GM goes to 60,000 volts.
And Ford hits with the electric Fusion.
Yes, and the I from Mitsubishi and so on and so forth. I don't think there are enough early adopters to buy just what GM and Nissan are planning. Let alone the rest of the stuff that's coming.
Totally agree with you, David. And here's the deal.
They're too expensive. It's not that the cars aren't cool or good.
They're cool cars. They're very cool cars.
But this is what happens when you have politicians dictating consumer choice and getting into that thing. Because here's the deal, and I've said this before, until you can pull into a recharging station, plug in your vehicle, spend the same amount of time you spend to fill up your car at a gas station, and then drive out with 300 miles of charge, electric vehicles will only be niche vehicles for certain parts of the country, urban areas. But when you have the politicians in Northern California and Washington, D.C., you know, telling us what to do, saying, it's so cool, you will adopt it and everything, it's not going to work.
Now, let me be clear, too. It's not that no one should build them. I think they should, and I think we need them. I think they are cool, and I think the technology needs to be pushed, and I think they should be sold at the dealer level, at retail, so that we can get a real look at what people are willing to pay, how many are willing to buy, and put them in the real world, not, you know, 20 cars in a postal fleet in Southern California. What I'm giving the cold to specifically are these big ramp-up of production plants at Nissan and GM. I think even 45,000 units for the U.S. market for the Volt next year, I think it's going to be a tough
Rats sell. A ruck, boys, as I said before. No, look, my whole thing is I think the technology's cool. Yeah, it'd be nice to have some amount of incentivization, but we've gone way overboard. And if you think this Solyndra, the photovoltaic maker, you know, is generating headlines, wait until the end of this decade, where in the state of Michigan right now, we have 6 battery plants. I hope one of them's open by the end of the decade. I really do. And, you know, we've seen Nissan pull out of its battery plant in Portugal. They've stopped it. Renault has stopped building its battery plant. I'd love to know the status of the building plans down in Smyrna for the plant to make Leafs and the batteries there. And remember, that's only going through because of the largesse of our government, which gave them, about $1.5 billion to do this?
I thought Nissan got more than you might be.
I want to say $1.5 billion. I could be wrong. But that's the thing, is that we're throwing, and it's not just the U.S. government. It's governments all over the world.
State
believe the polls. People say, yeah, I'll buy an electric car, and I'll happily pay more to get it. Well, they're not buying hybrids.
Well,
so if they're not buying hybrids, they're not going to buy electrics.
Like I mentioned on the website today, it's just like, you do a poll and you call someone up who paid $4.25 a gallon for regular, and you ask them if they want green cars, they're going to say, oh, hell yeah, on the poll. Mm-hmm. They also want to go eat at Five Guys and get the large fries and only have 5 calories. They also want to fly to Europe for, you know, $500. They also want, you know, tickets on the 50-yard line for the Super Bowl for $25. You know, if you pull someone, they'll say, yeah, I want green cars. They want to pay for them? Well, I want to pay for them. Who's saying about paying for them? If you're going to gift me one. And while we're handing out coal for electrification, how about coal for Tesla and Fisker? I mean, Fisker, give me a break. How much government money did we give them? $485 million so that Henrik Fisker can indulge his fantasies of a $100,000 plus supercar? What the hell?
Right.
Where'd that come from?
That's right.
And then Elon Musk, who is my candidate for the most tedious person on the face of the earth, you know, saying his Tesla's not only the best electric car, it's the best car in the world. Really? It's the best car in the world. I said, really? Okay. I just don't see it. I think we pissed away so much money on this.
Well, I think a lump of coal is so appropriate to your point, David. That's what I keep calling them, is coal cars. They run on coal. By and large, they run on coal. And for anybody to claim that these are emission-free cars is disingenuous and maybe downright deliberately misleading.
Yeah, and see, the problem here with overbuilding like I think they are is there's a massive cost to that. And once those programs start to lose even more money than companies think, they're going to pull back on the development, and that's where we're going to, because the technology is good. It needs to be developed. It needs to be pushed, and it needs to be sold at a real level. This, you know, it's sort of like we've gone from one extreme where companies either refuse to do it, and that the few who do, like I said, they sell a couple of science experiment cars to, you know, like UPS in Southern California or in Portland, and nobody learns anything. No one actually drives them, and nobody gives a damn. And then we go from there to deciding that, all right, yeah, we can sell 150,000 of these next year and start ramping up plants left and right at massive cost. You know, where's the measured push on these things?
I agree. I'll talk about where electrification does make sense, but let's take a break right now. And Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Chevrolet. The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm, and a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStar, turn-by-turn directions free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise. Okay, here's where I think electrification does make sense, and that's with mild hybrids like GM's e-Assist. And the reason I say that is you can get something like 80% of the benefits of a strong hybrid for one-third the cost. And here's why I really like it. I just drove the Chevy Malibu Eco with e-Assist. And thanks to that e-Assist, it's a 15-kilowatt motor that attaches where the alternator is. And just through a belt, it adds assist to the engine. But here's what's really cool. Is they're able to get such a numerically low final drive ratio. I'm going to go off the top of my head. I want to say it's like a 2.42. But at 70 miles an hour, that four-cylinder engine is only turning 1,500 RPM. And I got to tell you, it's awesome. To be in a front-wheel drive four-cylinder car that at 70 miles an hour, the engine is doing 1,500 RPM. There's no vibration. There's very little noise. It really enhances the drivability of the car. So it's not just, you know, a little bit of boost to save a little bit of fuel economy. The way that they've engineered this thing with that low axle ratio, it's a real pleasure to drive on the freeway. I've never experienced that. And I think that's a trend that we're going to see in a lot of cars. Peter and I, in fact, have both driven the Chevy Sonic with the turbocharger, and in the six-speed manual, same thing. At 70 miles an hour, it's turning 2,100 RPM. And, you know, these are typically cars that are doing anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 RPM or more. And so with the e-Assist, I think that's where electrification makes a lot of sense. You get the fuel economy advantage, and it makes the drivability of the car better.
I will give a gift to Kia, not for the advertising, but for the Optima. I think it's the best car in segment, and coming from Kia, and they were kind of nowhere in that segment before, and now I think they just vaulted to the top. It's a great car.
Well, I agree, except I've got a lump of coal to give to the Kia Optima hybrid.
Present for Kia.
Have you driven the hybrid? It may be the worst car on the market.
Really?
I'm telling you,
I haven't driven it.
It's terrible. It's bad. And for these reasons, when you go to step into the car, there's a big lag, especially if you're at a stop and the engine just turned off and now you step into it and the engine's got to start and the thing's got to get, oh my God, the lag is horrifically bad. And every time it starts, a shutter goes through the car. And this is true of other stop-start systems. But and then they've got a CVT in there, and that's another lump of coal that I'll get to later in the program. But, Yeah, I give a lump of coal to the Kia Optima Hybrid. I was shocked at how bad it is. And to your point, I love the Optima otherwise and would just agree that it should only get presents. The Hybrid, though, is terrible.
By the way, Santa has completely flown over Dearborn without stopping. No gifts, no coal, nothing. It's
we could give Alan Mulally a gift every year.
You could shower him with gifts.
Yeah, because,
right.
I mean, he's still...
Well, the board has done that already.
Yeah. No, he's still doing what he should be doing, and that's keeping the company focused.
But they do get a couple of lumps of coal. They blew it with the calibration of their dual clutch transmission, and they blew it...
On the Focus.
On the Focus, and even the Fiesta people don't like.
See, my Fiesta has a 6-speed side.
You don't even know, right. But, and they blew it on
the
interface.
You have a Fiesta?
Where have you been, David?
I haven't been here in a while. You bought a Fiesta?
Yes, I did.
Why?
I just wanted to experience the small car thing again.
Why don't you buy a Mini?
Yeah, because you have a Mini, David.
You gave the wrong answer. If you said, and this is my next lump of coal, and it goes to Mini. Now, I'm a Mini. I just bought my second Mini, and I love it. And I love the first Mini.
But you're giving them a lump of coal. Why?
For that ridiculous, god-awful... Cram it in the boot ad during the Super Bowl. It's one of the worst ads I've ever seen.
That was the worst.
And I'm an owner, and I would like to think I'm their target buyer for all future cars. And I saw this thing, and I just thought, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, that was just stupid.
It was horrible.
Well, I want to go back to the buy Ford touch, because I think where Ford gets a lump of coal is they're doing great work. And it's also been impressive to see how quickly they've reacted to these problems. You know, they're mailing out fixes, you know, memory sticks, thumb drives, whatever you want to call them. You just plug it into your Fusion or whatever, and voila, it redoes the system. So that's pretty cool. But what this has shown is we're getting the voice of the engineer, not the voice of the customer, into some of the systems at Ford. And that's something that they get a lump of coal for, because they, of anybody, should have caught that.
Yeah, they seem to have fallen into what BMW and Mercedes fell into like 4 or 5 years ago.
This is two instances. They're rushing stuff out in the case of my Ford Touch. In the case of the DCT, I believe they're calibrating it for that ultimate fuel economy. And they're sacrificing drivability because of it. But I'll give you another one, Subaru Impreza. Anybody who tries to use the radio on that will want to put a bullet through the dashboard, because they got these inky-dinky little buttons on it that, for my eyes, are not only hard to see, but as you're driving down the road, you know, as you try to touch these little dinky buttons, they're hard to hit. And so Subaru blew it big time just on the radio controls in the brand new Impreza.
Another lump of coal, and I think you mentioned this on your site, but I've got to give it out because it's to Bob Nardelli. When he talked to the Detroit News and said that, if the economy turned around, Cerberus would have done a fine job shepherding Chrysler through it. You know, the savings and loan operators, when I was covering those, the sort of the fallout of the S&L crisis in the early 90s, told me the same thing. Oh, all of our speculative real estate projects would have been just fine had the government not come in and stopped everything and just let economics take over. And the economic, no, it wouldn't have. They never would have spent on product what they needed to spend on product. And, you know, it's just like Sergio said when he came in, we were surprised by how little has been done in the past 2 years. And I've talked to Chrysler executives, and, you know, there were some of the biggest things Bob did, namely the buyouts of workers, indiscriminate. You know, when GM bought people out, they said, okay, this is how many workers we want out, and we'll offer it to everybody, but, you know, only X percent of certain departments can do it because we can't cut the place. Nardelli said, just let them go. And they lost like half of purchasing, a big chunk of finance. They had some departments that were so oversubscribed on the buyouts that the company had no capabilities. They had to bring them back on contract later to get the work done. And that's probably the biggest thing he did, and it was a total disaster.
Total disaster. And to me, this is a prime example of what happens when you bring somebody into the business who does not fundamentally understand the business that they're in. So they can only run the company by the income statement and the balance sheet. and then it's just a matter of numbers.
Sure, their default is to go after cost because they don't know how to generate revenue.
The fastest thing to cut is research and development. You save the biggest amount of money right there, and then the country comes out of recession, you got nothing to go with.
I didn't call him Minimum Bob for nothing.
Well, the thing is, you know, look, and I was scratching my head on this too. Why have Chrysler sales jumped since the Italians took over with, you know, not much new product? I mean, you had a Ram, you had a Durango, and you have a 300, but they were doing well. They were doing well before a lot of that stuff came out. There was no advertising going on under Cerberus, and certainly in 2009 when they went.
And my bet is, if you look into it, there was a war between the factory and the dealers, especially on the regional levels. And I don't know that for a fact, but I think if you look into it, you'll see that the dealers that survived, you know, got a whole lot better treatment from the factory.
I'm going to give a lump of coal to Dieter Zetsche because he keeps sending these memos out to the troops about we're going to be Mercedes-Benz again. It's going to be a tough fight, but we're still great, and we're going to be Mercedes-Benz again. He keeps repeating that. But, you know, and they've got some good products, but they have got to get a handle on this image wrangling thing because I think they've blown it convincingly in the last few years. I mean, Mercedes doesn't seem special enough anymore, you know.
I would agree, and this goes back to what we were saying about Audi before. Audi's like the hot thing. It's like, wow, I want to try that car out, the A7, the A6, the A8. It seems more special now than anything that Mercedes has got.
Yeah, and they've got some great stuff, but it's kind of gotten lost. And I don't know. They just don't have a handle on marketing and haven't had a handle on marketing for a long time. And I hate to be just another one in the chorus, but our Auto Extremist Car of the Year was the A7.
Yep. I was just going to say, I'd give a present for that because that's one of the best cars I've driven in a long time. The A7 is.
I liked it, but as you guys know, I liked.
He likes the A8.
I love the A8. Oh, my God, what a car. If I had to make a statement that I'd arrived, I'd show up in an A8. Well, hey, let's take a quick break.
No,
break.
That
thought.
I will say, if I wanted to make a statement, and this will make Jim McDowell happy because I've already trashed Mini. I think the coolest thing out there is the Mini with the Goodwood edition with the Rolls Royce interior. How cool is that? Mini with a Rolls interior for like $65,000. That's fantastic.
You give a present to them. And Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Hyundai. The sixth generation of the Hyundai Sonata is taking the industry by storm, and no wonder. It offers a fluidic design theme that gives it a strikingly modern, coupe-like exterior design, and yet the interior provides the roominess of a full-size car as measured by the EPA. The Sonata also provides an eco-friendly interior with soy-based foam for the seats. Put it all together with Hyundai's strong reliability and value proposition, and you've got yourself a really compelling package. Check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com.
Well, you know, I'm going to talk about a present that a car company is going to give me. And that's Rolls-Royce is going to give me a black-on-black Ghost to drive.
Cool.
Long-term test. No, I'm just
hoping. Yeah, you're dreaming.
Yeah.
That's my dear Santa.
Dear Santa, please drop off that black-on-black Ghost.
Yeah. Peter, you're dreaming.
Yeah, you're dreaming.
Aren't they looking like for a new head of marketing and PR for North America, Rolls-Royce?
I don't know. I
haven't heard. Oh. There you go. And that's
your
job.
There you go.
Then you just like pull one out of the press fleet.
Yeah, that's
every,
right.
Every week.
Exactly.
I want to give out simultaneously a lump of coal and a present to continuously variable transmissions. And I say that because technically I think they're really cool, and it's really neat what you can do with them. The transmissions themselves are actually inefficient, but when coupled with an engine and allowing it to run in a relatively narrow RPM range, you can make the overall package very efficient. And some Nissans, high-end Nissans and Infinities, have terrific CVTs in them. And then there's the rest. You know, I mentioned the Subaru Impreza before. What a piece of crap. The CVT in that is abysmal to drive. The Scion IQ, which I think is a really cute car, I really wanted to like it. It's got a CVT. I hate
the only one I've ever driven that I've liked is from Nissan.
Yeah.
Nissan's done good CVTs with bigger engines, too.
Well, actually, I had a Maxima, their hottest Maxima, with the CVT, and I just thought, man, with that motor, with such a sweet motor in it.
It is.
And it just cried for a different transmission. I just didn't care for it.
Is there, I mean, other than the A7, which we all really like, is there been a car that's really blown you guys away? And I like the Optima a lot for what it is. But, you know, there was sort of, you know, before the financial crisis hit, and companies all had money. There were a lot of good, there was just a parade of good cars coming out.
Well, crossover, I think the new BMW X3 is really good.
I think that part of the problem is that all cars are pretty good right now. And so there's not one that stands above the rest. And the one that I've been raving about the most recently is this Sonic with the 1.4 turbo 6-speed manual. I'm just knocked out by that combination. And maybe that's part of it. You know, same with...
You like the Sonic's manual transmission?
I found it fine. I didn't find a problem with it
at all. I think actually GM...
The throw was way too loosey-goosey.
I think GM and Ford should get presents for reestablishing American capability in small cars. I mean, for Cruze, Sonic, and, Focus, Fiesta. I mean, they...
I'm not a big fan of the Sonic. I do like the Cruze.
Yeah. Well, I was not a fan of the Sonic until I drove the 1.4 turbo with the 6-speed manual. That did it for me. I've driven the 1.8 four with the automatic transmission. I thought it's a fine car. It's competitive. But you get that other combination, and wow, it's just a delight to drive.
I did drive a Mazda 2, and it was very emerging market.
Isn't that a four-speed automatic?
I had a manual.
Oh, you had. Okay, yeah.
I believe I had a manual. I'm trying to think back, but I'm pretty sure I did. I didn't like that car at all. I mean, look, it is what it is. It's a cheap car, but not a fan. I give cool to Mazda for that one. And I generally like Mazda products. I mean, the Mazda Speed 3 is terrific.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I love about Mazda is they build driver's cars. But they're also one of the ones going back to those final drive ratios. Their cars at 70 miles an hour are all doing 3,500 RPM. You know, us an overdrive that slows this down.
What's Mazda's future now that they're decoupled from Ford?
Good question.
I think it's shaky.
Very shaky. Look, they're a really cool company. They've got tremendous engineering capabilities. But they sell, what, 1 million cars a year? That ain't going to take
it forward. And it's not a luxury brand where they're getting premiums to generate the money. They're going to need to partner up.
I agree.
If you could make a case that they should partner with PSA. They have a lot of the same capabilities, but at least they play in different markets. You know, one's in Japan and North America, and the other one's pretty much strictly a European play.
That's a good call. I like that idea. I'll give you a present for that one.
I deserve a present. I always deserve a present.
Okay, what else we got?
Did you drive the Countryman?
Yeah, I have driven the Countryman.
Yeah, I was actually more impressed with that than I thought, but I wanted to put a different body on it from a different manufacturer. It's not a Mini. I don't know what it is.
No, it's not.
But the package is really good. I'd love to see it rebodied, redesigned, and put on something else.
I liked it as a product. I don't think it's a Mini. Now, I'm a purist. Hall and I have talked about this because Hall drives a Clubman S like I do. We both decided we like it, but it's not a real Mini. The second problem, actually, is it needs a little more engine.
That may be, but it's really worked sales-wise for them this year.
Mini's grown great.
Their sales are up, I want to say, close to 20% on the year, and it's
right now,
strictly
Mini's
due to the Countryman.
It's kind of, from sales and standpoint, it's probably the brightest star in BMW.
Right. And so, to me, it's, I'm hearing what you guys are saying, almost like hearing the Cayenne arguments when it first came out. You know, it's not a true Porsche. It's the wrong thing for the brand and da-da-da-da-da. And it just
I'm not sure that. I don't think it's the wrong thing for Mini. I don't think it's a real Mini. I don't think it hurts the brand. Mini had, there were like 40 different variations of Minis over its history. And there was a Mini Moke that was like a cross between a Jeep Wrangler and a Mini.
Well, it was like a little Doom buggy.
Yeah.
they've had a lot of different variants over the years. So I think when you ruin a brand, you ruin it with the purists, and the purists will see Minis and Morris Minors and all kinds of neat stuff like that, and it really won't bother them. And the people new to the brand, they don't really know what it is anyway. They just know that it's small, stylish,
but they,
and fun.
They had to expand the line,
yes,
and they had to do something with a bigger back seat and luggage room, mm-hmm. and that's why you end up with something that's not a Mini. It's a maxi, if anything, but I understand why they're doing what they're doing. I don't know how you get around making something bigger because your original product is too small for most people.
Mm-hmm. I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Who else has got what?
Yeah, so I'll give a present to the true believers at GM and specifically Mark Royce for bringing out the ZL1 Camaro because, you know, as we were talking before the show, this horsepower thing is going to take a change in direction, you know, probably sooner than we like to think about.
Because of fuel economy regulations.
Yeah. So, and I haven't driven the ZL1 yet, but just the fact that they built it, I think, is pretty cool. And same with Ford for their true believers, Derek Cusack and his bunch for doing the King Kong show, the GT500. I mean, you know, if they're going to go out in flames, then this is a good way to go, then.
No, I agree with you. I give a present to all the true believers because this is the golden age of horsepower. It wasn't the muscle cars in the 60s. They were great.
Right.
But to be able to have a 200-mile-an-hour Mustang that meets all the emission and fuel economy standards, that's mind-blowing, yeah. Just mind-blowing.
And the ZR1 Corvette. I mean,
give a present to direct injection then.
Yeah, you do. Computer control, the whole nine yards. But, I mean, nonetheless, who would have thought that you would have the levels of performance that we've got today meeting all the federal regulations.
It, well, yeah.
It's really impressive.
I mean, think about it. 300 horsepower is like, you know.
So what?
Yeah, I mean.
Don't even talk about it.
Yeah, 300, 400, 500, 600 horsepower. I mean,
650.
Yeah, we just, these are the good old days.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Hey, so if we're giving presents to Malawi for the performance of the company year in, year out, what about for the future of the company and the succession plan? Much was made about this in the past couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that Wall Street Journal story was complete and utter bullshit. And they pull it out of thin air, and that's fine. But I think they have a succession plan, but they're not talking.
I don't know. I think there's one theory going around town that was a deliberate leak. Mm. And I almost wonder if it was a deliberate leak to get at Hyundai. Because remember, they mentioned John Krafcik as being a potential.
I'll
bet you that stirred up a hornet's nest in Hyundai.
Except, yeah. But
all the way back to Seoul.
If you really look at John, he's not qualified. He's just flat out not qualified. So that was a joke.
And then talk to executive headhunters who don't think he is qualified because.
Well, I said he isn't qualified.
Yeah, he is. He's done a terrific job of running a large sales marketing organization for a big foreign car company. He has a lot of input on product, but he hasn't run product development for a big organization like Ford. He hasn't run manufacturing. There's just a lot of aspects to managing a company the size of Ford that he hasn't done. The guy's really talented. He's on everybody's short list, so you can't take anything away from him. But
right.
Would you really pass up Hinrichs, Fields?
No. That's not going to happen. What I wondered all along.
The thing is, Phil Martin.
Phil Martin was mentioned, the story was bogus.
And
I think
everyone thought. This is a leak. No one's thinking that.
I mean, my point really. So we're all sort of under the assumption, anyway, until proven otherwise, that Fields is the guy for the job.
Totally agree.
Is he the guy for the job?
Is Mark Fields?
Yeah.
I believe he is. I really
I think
do
so too. But
well, look, you know,
it up because it's a fun.
It's a fun topic.
That's been kicked around the past couple of weeks.
Here's my whole thing. He ran Mazda. He's got experience in Asia. He ran Argentina. He's got experience in Latin America. He ran Ford of Europe. He ran PAG. He's here. The guy can do, you know, math games in his head, you know, discounted cash flow in three different currencies. And that's the kind of stuff boards of directors love to see. That's what they understand. So that's why I think Mark's getting it.
Yeah, I think Mark is eminently qualified to take over whenever Alan steps down, which you just never know.
You never know.
So the only criticism I've heard of Mark is that he was reared in that old political Ford.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I've talked to Mark, and he tries to manage the America's group to kind of a mirror image of what Mulally does with the entire company.
Well, look, he's been seated at the seat of the master, at the foot of the master, for 3 years now. He's learned a lot from Mulally. So I think it's a different mark, I think, but I don't work inside the company. What do I know? I'm sure there are people inside Dearborn who have a much better opinion of what's going to happen.
Bill likes him. Bill Ford likes him. Fields, uh-huh. too. And, so, and that still carries a lot of water over there if the Ford... Bill Ford and the
you
family.
Bet it does.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, funny how much 40% of the voting stock, right? 40%'s a lot. I want to give out one last present. We're at the top of the show here, top of the hour, to another ad, and this had nothing to do with the car industry whatsoever. It was a Heineken ad, and even though I said the Kia Rock Party Anthem was my favorite car ad, this is my favorite ad of the year, bar anything, bar none.
Is that the one where they're in that? Sort of listen to like some kind of like very electrified mariachi music or something like
it's
that.
It's the weird it's, whatever it's like that is. You're in some sort of nightclub or something like that. Ben, you got that ad? Play some of this.
It is cool. I like this ad a lot.
And this guy's going through all these different scenes. I can watch this ad 100 times in a row, and every time I watch it, I see something different. I don't get bored with it at all. And maybe that's why I wanted
it's
to talk
like
about
a,
it.
It's like a weird scene from like some obscure 60s espionage movie or something.
Yeah, or a colorized Charlie Chan movie, you know, with you know some entertainment thrown into it. It's bizarre. It's exotic. And the lesson I think here is I don't like ads where there's even a funny punchline and you laugh, ha, 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 ha. And the next time you go, hey, everybody, look at this. And you all laugh. And the third time is, oh, yeah, I've already seen this ad. And the 10th time, you want to put a bullet through the screen. This ad, I can watch again and again and again. And that's
you,
what
you
ads should do.
You get a sealed web. You're putting a lot of bullets.
I'm putting a lot of bullets in places. That's right. No, I don't. No, I don't have a gun and didn't do any of that. It's just a form of speaking, you know? So any last ones before we...
Give a present to our viewers who keep coming back and all the car executives all around the globe who listen to the podcasts and, you know, 10,000 of you or more a week. Download the podcasts of Autoline After Hours, so that's pretty cool. And these are a lot of the people, a lot of the true believers doing it, so.
I agree.
Present to them. And a present to our sponsors for keeping us going. So it's been,
I'll give a present to the fans who still, even though I'm not a regular, send emails, send me stuff on Facebook and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. We wouldn't be here if it were not for all of you watching and listening right now. So have a great Christmas or at least a great holiday, New Year, and we'll see you in the New Year because we're not going to do a show next week. We're taking time off too, but it's been great having you all here with us. David, great having you back.
Great
you know,
back, John.
Just
thanks
for this special show, and Peter, as always.
John.
Good having you here, man.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it's been a great year.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai Elantra, winner of the ALG Residual Value Award 2 years in a row.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at autoline.tv.